three hole Mickey. So I never knew that you're only meant to have one hole in your wheelie.
Whoa.
So I've got three.
No way.
Right? So imagine this is it, right? Right?
Yeah.
And obviously this is a bit smaller. But imagine this is it, right? And here is where it would normally be. One
yes,
of them.
Yes.
Right? I've got, and this is the belly and this is the top. I've got one, two, three.
Well, we are in the podcast studios yet again with Joe.ie and the Laughter Lounge. Well, you must be joking. And we're delighted to have in studio with us a longtime friend of ours, all the way from the Rebel County, Ross Brown.
What's the crack, lads? What's happening?
Ross, how are you, man?
Not too shabby, no, not too shabby.
Good stuff.
We know Ross a long time, don't we, Will?
Yeah, I mean, we do. To the point we...
You have a very historical part of me and Will's comedy career.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, and so you tell him. Yeah, the first night we gigged with you and met you at the Half Moon in Cork was the first night we got paid for comedy.
You're joking.
I swear to God.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That was the last night I got paid for comedy.
3 weeks ago.
And it was very significant for me and Willa because obviously we'd been doing open spots forever around the place and then we actually were booked to do open spots at that gig as well. We both did a few minutes each or whatever and it went well. It was a lovely venue that actually, the Half Moon Theatre, yeah.
One of the best venues I've played in Cork, yeah, really out nice. Straight.
Yeah.
And I think someone should
resurrect it. Well, so hang on, the Cork comedy scene is buzzing at the moment and we'll get to that in a few minutes, Ross. But that night, right, remember Ross was headlining? And he was...
Oh, my Jesus.
We were like, we'd never... Because all we'd seen up to that point was comedians doing jokes and jokes and jokes. And obviously you do jokes, but also you do all the mad stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, what was it?
Ross, your clothes are... I was going, how is that... If that bloke's on somewhere else, I was going, how is anyone meant to follow that?
Yeah, I have to go on after him, yeah.
What was the closer?
You got someone's shoe.
Right. Oh, was this the shoey?
Seriously, Ross, what the fuck?
My brother-in-law turned around to me and he goes, I saw Johnny Vegas on TV and he does this thing. And I was so new in comedy that I was just like, that sounds like great crack.
Yeah. Tell him what it is, Ross.
So I used to get a shoe off someone in the crowd.
Yes.
And then I used to basically fill it with whatever drink. People could put whatever they want into it. And I used to turn around for like a minute and then turn back around and then I'd down it. But it was...
From the shoe?
From the shoe.
From the shoe.
From the shoe.
My
I think
God.
It was just to impress my brother-in-law. And then after about four times, I was like, I'm a germaphobe. What the fuck am I doing this for?
And we were like,
brilliant.
Oh my God. I mean, we were thinking, geez, what, we better start bringing stuff like that into our acts now. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll eat your underpants.
Yeah. I'll eat chips out of your knickers.
Three blokes, one cup.
And that night, he said there was a great crowd in that night. And your man, whoever was promoting it that night, Ross, just went, actually, used two lads from Dublin, used it all right. There's €50 each. And me and Will, I thought we had won the lotto. We were like, we have arrived. We are professional comedians now.
Yeah.
And do you remember the two of us ran down the street holding hands, skipping?
Yeah, we did.
We were like,
with a tin man and a scarecrow.
Yeah. But you know what? It was mad because not only did we get the €50 each that night, it was like it opened the gate for us to tell every other promoter now, we get paid.
Yeah.
We don't do open spots anymore.
You got a wharf
so,
now.
Yeah, so in fairness, the Cork people and the Rebel County were the ones that gave us the green light to get a few quid, like.
Yeah.
And after that, people were booking us and they had to pay us, like.
Yeah.
Because in fairness, we'd travel the length and breadth of the country, like up and down doing gigs from Galway to Cork to Belfast, to anywhere that would basically have us. And that was the €50 that changed the game, like.
It really did. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah, I remember that gig. Delamere was on that night as well,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was actually.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah. Because I used to have a line, I'd be like, oh, I'm Offaly's top beatbox champion. And he goes to me and he's like, are you from Offaly? I was like, no. I just picked a place I didn't know where it was.
Should have said, are we meeting Derry? No, I'm from Finglas.
But, so Russell, how long are you doing comedy then?
I think I'm doing comedy about, I'd say, a year longer than a year.
Right.
I think, roughly around the same time. Myself, Chris Kent, Fred Cook all would have started around like the same 3 or 4 month period, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
And that couldn't have been much longer than that. I did one or two gigs like a year earlier, but I just literally did two gigs. I did one in Bar Cuba in Galway, and then I did one in...
Bar Cuba in Galway, what a venue. Oh. And it's opened again.
Is
they're
it?
They're reopening it.
No way.
I think they're trying to put a comedy club into it again.
Good job.
Yeah, Jesus. I'm not joking.
What a great venue, Russ.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The world's worst introduction I ever got on stage was in Club Cuba. Back in Galway, Jerry Mallon, and I love Jerry Mallon. Jerry Mallon is one of my favourite people in Irish comedy. Jerry, if I listen to this, I love you, but this was the worst fucking introduction I'd ever gotten on stage. So I'm doing an open spot, right? And Jason's on, right? And Jerry's host, and Paddy Courtney's there as well. And he comes into the dressing room and goes, look, I'm just going to do a few minutes, and I've got to bring on Paddy. And then when you're finished, Eric, we bring you on, Dan. You do whatever you do.
For protein.
And then I was like, all right, nice one. I'm nervous. Paddy goes on, rips it, of course, you know. And then Jerry walks out, and I think he's after having a couple of drinks now at this stage. He just goes, comedy clubs around the country, they try and introduce new talent by doing an open spot. This fella's come all the way down from Dublin, and I don't remember his name, to be honest with you. And I don't know, it could be shit. I don't know. Anyway, here he is. And I walked onto the stage, they sound me on footsteps. And feedback off the mic. And I was like, hell yes.
The best story I heard, I was talking to Fred Cook on the phone a couple of weeks ago, because we're going to do a gig down in Kerry later on in the year for a young lad. But anyway, Fred says to me that the worst introduction he ever got off Jerry Mallon is that he was... Did I tell you about this? So he was in a comedy club down in Galway, and Jerry was down there, and he'd had a few scoops as well. And he said to Jerry, or he says to Fred, you're going on first. But in the front row, there was about four or five people with Down syndrome, mm-hmm. which is grand, because Down syndrome people are as much welcome to any comedy club as anywhere. People in wheelchairs, wherever, yeah. they can all come. So Jerry goes out on the stage. He says to Fred, I'm going to do about 10 minutes and bring it on, 7 to 10, and I'll bring it on. He said Jerry went out on the stage, and there was a young man in the front row going, I want me dinner, I want me dinner, I want me dinner. And Jerry just picked up the mic and goes, ladies and gentlemen, your first act, Fred Cook. And just handed him the microphone and just walked off.
Fred walking on going, what the fuck?
I did a gig in Cork. I was asked to do a gig. It was a fundraiser, and I wasn't told what it was. I was just told it's a fundraiser. It's 150 quid. I was like, bang on, perfect. Where is the venue? I don't ask many questions back in the day. It was just going off to do a gig. I was the only one on. They were like, can you bring yourself up or whatever? I was like, yeah. Or he said, look, you're the only comedian. You know, someone will introduce you. Bang. Perfect. Arrived. The place was like Beirut.
Right, okay.
Right, with walls around it. Right, that's basically what it was like. Walked in, I was like, oh, this place is dodgy. So I went in and nobody really knew what was going on. There was no advertised comedy gig. There was nothing on. It was just blanket fundraiser event. Got in, standing there, and your man was like, I'll bring you up there in about like 10 minutes or whatever. It's like, grand, cool. So they turned off the music, and then this guy goes up on stage and he went, thanks everyone there for coming to the fundraiser. He says, obviously we're raising funds for like a suicide line that we've set up ourselves in the community. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Like, you know, and he says, my brother, he unfortunately was a victim to suicide. He says, my uncle also. And he starts getting really emotional, like, you know, and he goes, my best friend, he says, and like, you know, in the last 12 months, like another four of my buddies, like, he goes, without lines like this, we wouldn't be able, you know, to keep those people around. He said, that's why we're doing it. And he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Ross Brown. And I'm going, it's like, do you know that Alfred Hitchcock zoom? So I walk up and go to take the mic off him, and he holds onto the mic and he goes, thanks very much for coming. I was like, yeah, absolutely. Look, no problem. You know, hope you can raise money. He goes, we're just going to do a minute silence there now. So I...
Oh, no!
So I'm standing on stage waiting to do comedy like this. I had to follow a minute silence with a guy crying beside me. And then it ended and he just went... And just walked off.
Oh, my God.
I was like,
God.
Hello. And you know what I'm like. I'm high energy and stuff like that. Yeah. So to go from that mood to try and shift into... I was like, dude...
I bet you won the Marble eventually, though, Ross, did you?
As soon as I found out what the thing was, I was like, I'm waiving this fee, because I thought it was like a fundraiser for like a soccer club or something.
Yeah, I've done, you know what, Ross? You're very much so like myself as well. I've done stuff like that where you just go, do you know what, this is a freebie, like. And it's great that you're of that kind of thinking, like myself and like Eric, that some stuff that people just touch on and ask you to do things, like that thing I was talking about for that young lad in Kerry, the guy got in touch with me on Instagram and said to me, is there any chance you could send me a video of yourself or doing a white collar boxing night in aid of my son, Alex, who was really, really sick. And I said, he said, look, we love you and we think it'd be great for the night. And I just made the decision there and then. I had a look on the Instagram page and I went, I could make a little bit of a difference for this young fella. Yeah. Like, Do you know what I mean? And I got on to Fred Cook, as I mentioned earlier. And Fred is a really good friend of ours. A really good friend of ours. And the gig is in Listowel. And you were doing Mike the Poise. And I said to your man, look, if Ross goes down, give Ross a shout. And just go down and 20 quid a ticket and Mike the Poise, 75 people. Yeah. It's 1,500 quid that the young lad never had. And look, it's great that we as comedians and performers are in that position to be able to go. And I know some people might think, look, come here, it's 1,500 euro they never had.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And MCD and Aikens, as I know, and the Laughter Lounge, it'll throw us a couple of things and you know, for a raffle on the night.
Yeah.
And if you got them 2 grand, it's 2 grand that they don't have to 100%. Look for. 100%. You know, so it's just.
So you wave your feet. Like, I always wave my feet, but then they handed me expenses sheet and go, that's a petrol one there, and that's the whole
thing. The old politician one.
So yeah, just 800 quid
now. Now the helicopter with it.
You owe me 400 quid.
No, it is. Come here.
No, the gig was terrible. The gig was terrible. Here, at one stage, I went, can we have another minute silence so that I can do a joke?
You know, there's a lot more giving than there is in getting. That's what you said, let me sell me.
So, Ross, before, we just want to talk about Cork and the comedy scene down there. And what I've noticed over the last couple of years, particularly the last 4 or 5 years, is that it seems to be flourishing. And, there's a lot of clubs. It used to be just City Limits.
Yeah.
And now we've got Coco's. There's three or four Cocklands as well as doing gigs. And it's just great to see. And there's a lovely amount of support. It's kind of like the way the people, the comedians in Belfast are doing so well. Mickey Bartlett, Shane Todd, they're all, the Belfast people, the Northern Irish people get around them and support them. And there seems to be a similar vibe from Cork now, I have to say.
Yeah, there was a while in Cork where it was kind of like, do people know comedy happens in Cork?
I know.
Yeah. It was always a very hard sell. Us, Ross, for comedy clubs. Because you're going to, it's the largest county.
Yeah.
It's the second biggest city. Yeah. And you're kind of going, surely there's more room for more than one comedy club. And now it's, I think what it is, it always starts grassroots. So it's always like, if there's an influx of open mic comedians, they then want to set up a room so that they have a place to practice.
Yeah.
And it's also currency for new comedians to go, you play my club, I'll play your club. And then that way everybody benefits. And then what happens is some clubs die off, but then other ones end up staying for years. So Coco Club would have been one of those places that would have started off for comedians to have a base for themselves. And then it ends up becoming this thriving club where they're running multiple nights now, isn't it? Yeah, multiple nights. Yeah. I think it's 5 nights a week at this stage. And there's brand new act nights. There's brand new material nights. Then there's your main, weekend shows and everything. So I think that's what it is. And I think it's the same with the open micers. You'll have a load of new comedians. Some will die off. And then the new crop of comedians, the new generation of comedians stick around.
Yeah.
And that was the same with the LV. Like back when we started
LV.
Out.
Do you remember the LV?
The LV. And then you had Nancy Spains as well, Up the Hill. That mad one. And then you had City Limits, obviously, was always there. And you had a couple of other places, you had the Half Moon Club and other kind of once a month ones or once every second week. And then that kind of fizzled out.
And then the Wonky Donkey came along then as well for a while, which is great. Mike Morgan used to run it, which is a great venue. I used to enjoy that immensely.
Yeah. White Horse and Ballincollig now.
I did that once. What a venue.
I used to live right beside it.
The White Horse?
So where the White Horse is, there's a garage right beside past the garage, Force Estate on the left. I lived in there.
Did you? I lived in Cork?
I lived in Cork for 10 months.
We were wondering why shootings went up in Ballincollig.
So I lived in Ballincollig for about 7 months. And then after Ballincollig, I moved up the hill from Douglas. I think it's called Donnycarney or Donnybrook, is it?
Donnybrook, Marybury.
I lived up there.
There's a Donnybrook in Cork as well.
So I walked all in around GSK and I worked for a car company. I'm not going to name them because your man was a prick that owned the place. Come here, I have to say, Cork people, in my books, and I'm not just saying it because you're hearing me say it, in lots of other places, salt of the earth. And I was like we talked about before the podcast, I was going through a really rough time and I went down to Cork. And I'm not just saying this, if it wasn't for the Cork people, I would have really struggled. And I don't forget them.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you went down and saw all the Cork people and went, Jesus, things could be worse.
It's like when people watch Eric people Cox. Leave and they're like, we're the Jeremy Kyle of geography.
What
we're like,
we things aren't that bad. There's your 3 followers from Cork now, bleeding. Boom,
boom, boom. I remember, I love Cork people and their expressions. I remember when we did the Fitting In tour, and I remember doing a Cork Opera House with Desi, and I went on, I did me 10 minutes or whatever, and it really went well. It was one of the best at the start. I was buzzing afterwards, and I went down afterwards, and because you want to be, Oh yeah, yeah, that was me on the stage. Yeah, yeah. And all the people walking out going, and this Cork fella came up to me and he was so dramatic and he went, "There he is now. A star is born. A star is born." And I was like, "Oh, thanks very much. Thanks very much."
I'm not talking about you, by the
behind you. You're gonna lie.
He was an astrologer.
Yeah.
Would you fucking go out of the way, you dumb cunt?
So, Ross Brown, you're a stand-up comedian. You're a radio presenter. One of the most successful breakfast show in Cork at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, like, number one.
Ross has so many strings to his bow now. But here's the one. Here's the one we all want to talk about now. You are one of the main writers
on
The Young
Offenders.
Ross, tell us how that came about. Because all I've ever known about The Young Offenders is that Peter Foote will be the main man. And obviously, MAPJ's in it. Hillary's in it.
I think as well you should give us a run up to what you've done in television before you got there.
Yeah, because it all ties together as well.
Yeah, because you that's kind of the run up to it. It's not like you just went, I'm doing The Young Offender. So people, if you could just give people a little bit of an insight of what you have done before you got to there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So everybody used to go to Edinburgh and I never went to Edinburgh because I had a mortgage and kids. So I was like, I can't afford to go to Edinburgh.
I respect that.
So for that month, I always used to kind of go, what can I do? What doors can I bang on that everybody else is already banging on a different door for the month?
Yeah.
Where can I go? So I literally used to go up to Dublin on a bus or on an air coach. I used to Google and find out where every production company was and do a bit of research. And I used to literally knock on the door, cold call, hand them a DVD disc, going, this is him hitting camera stuff that I made myself. I've loads of sketches, I've loads of ideas and all that kind of stuff. And I think just by doing that, kind of, you know, people like Larry Bass and people like the lads, you know, who made Naked Camera and Kite Entertainment and all that kind of stuff, they all probably, like, word was going around that there is a guy that does hidden camera. So when finally something came up, which was The Fear, I think my either my DVD or else just my name was floated. And because they were casting it, I got a call then saying, hey, do you want to try out for this hidden camera show? There'll probably be like 10 people on it. You might be one of them that comes on maybe for one episode or two or three sketches. So I went up to the test day. And then after the test day, they rang me and they said, we're actually going to go with four people. You're one of the four.
I know you got casted for it as well.
Did you get casted
for it?
Well?
Did, yeah, did you? Didn't get it, obviously, but I got casted.
Yeah.
What do you mean you didn't get it if you got casted?
No, I did. I got like a...
You were a tryout? Like.
Yeah,
I got a tryout as well.
Sorry, a tryout.
Loads of people did. Hidden Camera's such a unique style of doing things because you could, on paper, you go, this person's hilarious, this person's hilarious. Some people did it for the test day and went, oh, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like themselves, they were like, it's a different gear shift, it's a different thing.
Yeah, and come here, you've got to have a big pair of balls to do something like that.
Yeah,
I tell you something, and I'm not, you know, bleeding, blowing smoke up your arse, but you have that. There's a lot of comedians, as you said, are really, really funny,
right
off the cuff.
Yeah.
You put them out into a public where it's unknown. And they're trying something. They can't do it.
Yeah, whereas me then, I'm not funny. But
no, we weren't saying that, Ross Brown. You said that. You're writing around jokes here, Ross Brown.
Do you know what it is? You have to be able to sit in uncomfortableness and awkwardness.
Yeah.
Because as we were doing sketches, I'd go, as bad as this feels now, that's what actually will make it a better sketch later on.
Yeah.
So if you can sit and just be in that horrible, uncomfortable, awkward situation with someone, I literally would be playing the edit back in my own head going, keep it going longer, keep it going longer.
Right.
So I did The Fear. And then after season one, Jennifer Zamparelli stepped out. And then it was myself, Hillary, and Chris Tordoff. Sorry, it was Chris Tordoff stepped out after the first series. Then it was me,
Chris
Hillary,
Tordoff, who played the Viper.
Viper, yeah, absolutely hilarious. And brilliant. Again, I just don't think, I think he did a season and went, I think I prefer doing other stuff than this. It was his call. And then after season two, Jennifer Zamparelli, I think was having a baby and she stepped out. And then it was just myself, Hillary, and then Fred Cook came in to do like the musical style sketches and stuff, which were absolutely fantastic. So it kind of went from a cast of four to a cast of two. And then Fred came in as well to do extra stuff. So I went from being like the guy who was barely hanging on by the skin of his teeth to get cast to kind of all of a sudden being like, oh, you're number two in the credits, which I didn't even know meant anything until they had to actually sit down and be like, that's a good thing. Like,
okay, right.
We never knew that myself.
Yeah,
until now.
I've heard people talking about like where they appear on credits.
Yeah.
And it's a thing, like.
Is
you know? It?
It
is, yeah, it is.
And I'm going to rewatch all them Fair City episodes now and see where they are in the
why
credits.
Why am I after the key grip?
Yeah, why am I after the cleaner? What's that all about?
The van
cleaner
driver.
Hasn't even got a name.
Yeah.
Let me even see the van driver.
Taxi driver number two, I'm behind him.
So then we did the two seasons. Then in season three, I started pitching loads of sketches. I started writing sketches. I started like pitching ideas for Hillary and pitching ideas for other people. And then when our director couldn't direct, they said, "Do you want to direct Hillary for a day?" And I was like, "Oh my God, now I'm getting my teeth in everything." So I loved it. I used to, like, if I was doing 2 days and there was a day in the middle, I'd offer to come in for free and just sit in the office and write and come up with ideas. So
you see, this is the thing with Ross. He's always had it. And yeah, this is what's got him places. He's got you've got an incredible work ethic. You know what I
just
mean?
Love comedy. It's the only place where I'm comfortable. I'm like,
yeah.
It's the only place where I feel like, oh, this is where I can be fully myself.
But you reap what you sow, Ross, and all the success that's come your way, it's been very well earned because you put the yards in, you put the graft in, and as you say there, you're even, you know, putting yourself forward for the experience and working for free. Do you know what I mean? That's amazing.
Yeah. No, you are. Like, myself and Eric have known you over the years. You're a workhorse. Like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like kind of the early days as well. You travel and you graft and you could be in Belfast of a Tuesday night and Cork of a Wednesday night. And it's like, just do it. Like,
yeah.
People don't see the in-between of what happens when you're going to gigs. People just think, oh, he's on stage for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They don't see the 2.5 hours that you're coming up from Cork or the 2.5 hours that you're getting back down the road.
Or the 2.5 hours you're coming in Ballymun because of traffic.
Yeah, and a car on its back.
Yeah, at a cemetery. You know what
I
mean? Yeah.
I was at the rap party for the first and second season of The Fear. And at the same time, I was, because like, you know, RTE, you know, hidden camera show, shoestring budget. The money is not what people think the money is. People are like, you're on television, you've made it. I'm working for my dad as a contract cleaner during the mornings.
I know, yeah.
So I had to leave our rap party, right? Not have any pints or anything. Just went to the rap party to show face. Drove up from Cork to Dublin, you know, budget and money going like, do I have enough money for petrol up and down? But to be professional and show up and actually, you know, be part of the team.
Yeah.
And then, like, I remember our director said to me, I thought you had like a massive drinking problem that you couldn't have a drink. Because I always had to leave, drive back and be inside in a place cleaning with my dad, elbow deep in a toilet at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So like, everyone's going, the glamour of a rap party. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm cleaning toilets in 6 hours, lads. Do you know? So,
yeah, and it's mad because I kind of live that lifestyle as well. Like, I mean, I walk on the weekends and I gig and I'm on stage and people get photographs taken with me and it's like, yeah, high five. And then on Monday morning, I've got a shoulder full of scaffolding boards and I'm building a scaffold outside someone's house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and they don't actually see that. Like this, and no disrespect to England or anything like that, but I mean, if you're doing well in England, chances are you're doing well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're not knee deep and bleeding, cleaning fluids, or you're not up to your eyes on a building site or wherever it might be. It's that, like, that's just the way it is here at the minute.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We haven't got the BBC, UTV, Channel 4, you know, any of these things to give us kind of a little bit of a boost. RTA and TV3 at the best of times are doing the best that they can on that shoestring budget that has been there forever. Like,
yeah.
I mean, come on for Jesus' sake. I mean, some of the best TV programmes, comedy on television, we'd The Savage Oi, they never done it again.
Yeah.
We'd Irish Pictorial, they never done it again.
Hardy Books,
they never done it. Come here, they never done it. So they're not doing stuff that, by the public's account, people I've spoken to, not only comedians, but the ordinary Joe public, are going, we love that. Yeah, why didn't that happen again? And my question is to TV producers and TV companies is like, why didn't it fucking happen again, like?
I think what it is, I think everyone's afraid of taking a risk. And the only times they ever took a risk were all the times that it paid off. Like, Savage Oi on paper was a massive risk for RTE. I mean, they literally just threw out every rule and went, we're going for this. Blizzard of Odd, obviously a low budget, it was shot in a studio similar to this.
Yeah.
Someone standing in front of a screen, you know what I mean? Colin Murphy was carried the entire thing because he's so good. You know, you got stuff like The Panel, you got stuff like The Fear, you know, all those things are like, they're shots in the dark, but I think if they're not willing to take a shot in the dark, then you're not going to strike gold. That's like standing on the ground going, we're not going to dig, we're just going to wait for the gold to fucking pop
but
out of the ground.
But you've also got to allow it to breed and grow as well, like, you know what I mean? There was a panel show that I was part of just after The Panel finished, and it was by the same company, and it was called Next Week's News.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so Bernard was the host, PJ was a captain, Delamere was another captain, and I was one of the panellists. And I did two episodes of it. I remember Seamus Cassidy was the producer, and then I started writing for the show, writing little segments for the show. And the first couple of episodes didn't get great viewers, but then something happened that by episode 4 and 5, the fucking numbers were going really high. But by episode 6, RT had made the decision that the show was getting cancelled, that they weren't renewing it for it. And like, it's grown. Yeah. What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Like, it's, give it time. Like,
that
would be like if we started our new radio show last July, and that would be like them turning around going, guys, we've given it 6 months and it hasn't like, no, we were doing really well. We're number one. Like, but if it was a case of like, if it was a teething process of a show, you know, if we didn't hit the ground running, there are a lot of like radio stations that would be like, actually, we're pivoting again. You're like, like at least our station is kind of like, radio station is fantastic. They kind of go, no, no, we're investing in ye. Yeah. And as soon as you have that from day one, you're kind of going, oh, we've got room to breathe. Yeah. And that's when you can start creating fun, good stuff, because you're not constantly looking over your shoulder going, are we for the chop? And all this kind of stuff. I was getting the train back once from The Fear, season three, and Peter Foote just happened to be in Euston Station as well. He was like, you getting the train to Cork? I was like, yeah. And he was like, all right, cool. So we got onto the train, and then he was like, have you any book or anything to do like on the train? I was like, no. He goes, do you want my iPad there? He goes, I have a script. Do you want to read it and see what you think? And I was like, he goes, you don't have to. I was like, dude, I read scripts all day for you. So I read the script. It was a feature film. And then he went, if you want to put on your notes there, you can just tap that thing and put in some notes. So I was like, okay. So I started writing notes for him on the iPad.
Sorry, had Peter done that at that stage?
He hadn't. Well, he'd done Republic Italy, yeah. And he was the main guy on The Fear as well. Oui. So and he'd done, I think at that stage as well, he'd done The Clinic as well, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Not The Clinic. What was it called? It was like the Centre.
Oh, The Centre. Yeah.
So he'd done all those things and loads of advertising stuff and everything. So he was like, this is my feature that I'm kind of working on. And I left him a ton of notes, but constructive notes that I thought, right, you know. Right.
Yeah, you should take up window cleaning your shoes.
Yeah.
Don't sit so close to me on the train.
Any chance you can help Will Arum under a load of scuffling?
Yeah, he'd love to be on a panel show.
So Jimmy rang me up the next day and went, don't you ever touch my iPad again.
So he rang me back like a week later and he was like, dude, you should get into script editing. He was like, I pay people to do script editing for me, and that's as good a job as I've ever had.
You mean you're not paying me?
Yeah. I was like, hang on a second.
How much an hour are you paying them? So we were on that train for 3 hours.
So that's how that initial...
Yeah, and then we meet up and go to the cinema all the time, and then one day we were in Nando's, and I was like, I've got an idea for a movie, because at the time I was trying to write novels and books, and I goes, I think this might be a movie. And he was like, pitch it to me. So I pitched it to him, and then straight away he was like, dude, we're making it. So then we started working on that. Was that
Anal Action in Tulip Land?
That's the one. You've seen it. Brilliant. He's never made it past the first 6 minutes.
What a cracker.
Scene two is amazing.
Great film.
So then he called me in again like another 6 months later, and he was like, do you want to do a couple of days writing with me in the office? And that was day one of Young Offenders, the season, not the movie. The movie had already been out. That's day one of the Young Offenders. And then I started working with him on all of his projects.
Brilliant.
You know, and then when Young Offenders came like as the years went on, he'd give me more and more responsibility on. He'd go, hey, can you write Connor's voiceovers for this episode? Can you punch up this scene? Can you finish this scene? Can you go through it and write all just the action for this, you know, first act of the show or the first two sequences? So I was jobbing on everything. And then I, you know, a lot of the time it's the two of us in front of a laptop and we're sitting down and we're literally like pitching line for line. Like, you know what I mean? So, brilliant. And Peter's got a great meritocracy where he's like, funniest thing wins.
Oh, brilliant.
It doesn't matter who comes up with it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Often we'll come in after like a week of doing something and he'll go, did I say that or you say that? And I'm like, I think you said that. And he's like, I thought you said that. Like, there's no preciousness.
But isn't that great? What I'm saying, isn't that a great quality as writers, that if the three of us are writing something, no matter what it is, to go, right, if yours is funnier than mine, take it.
Comedy
don't
wins.
Care.
Comedy wins.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then you're writing the funniest
show. There's no ego involved. You know what I mean?
Top trumps a comedy. Yeah. Who has the best line?
Yeah. And then if something doesn't work, nobody gets offended because you're going, okay, on to the next one. On to the next one. I've pitched so many ideas to Peter and he's went, it's actually very funny, but it actually kills the emotion of the scene. I've learned so much from Peter.
Right.
And then when he was abroad, he was doing another project and he was over in the States and he said to me, look, do you want to write an episode of a draft for Young Offenders for an episode? I went, grand, I'll write a draft. He said, I'll come back then and we'll carry on. So I did that and he read it and then he rang me back and he said, do you want to write the first pass of all six episodes? So I wrote the first pass of all six.
What does that mean, the first pass?
So basically the first draft.
Okay.
And then we come in and then we start ripping it apart and this works, this doesn't work and everything.
Right.
First run of it. Like. And then after that, he was like, I'm giving you an episode. So you have your own episode. And then he gave me an episode, which ends up becoming episode three of this season. And then after that, he was like, do you want to do another episode five as well? And then five.
Brilliant, isn't it?
And then five became so dense that it ended up becoming five and six. So we split the episode into two. So I think it's the first episode in Young Offenders where it's a to be continued at the end of a certain episode.
A cliffhanger.
Yeah. Now, Peter's always like, his footprint and his fingerprints are always on it. So like whatever you give to Peter, there's always another layer. Like, so it's, I'll always say like, it's always co-writing.
Because yeah, it's great.
It's very much Peter Foote production.
But you know what? And it's great that you're open-minded as well, that in a way, like, he kind of has you on a harness. Yeah. But you're doing your thing.
Yeah.
But he's there if anything goes wrong.
Yeah.
To go to give you that pull and go, no, Ross, we'll do this, we'll do whatever. Yeah. And I think that's great. No, but yeah, but inevitably, what's going to happen in the end is they're going to take you off the harness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you understand me? Yeah. And he'll have that much belief in you. He'll have that much faith in you, your writing, your capabilities, the whole lot, that they go, listen, I'm going off to France for a month. The thing is yours and I trust you 100%.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, like, even like when you're talking about the credits, I was always at the end credits where all the cast and crew are, and it would always say additional content.
Your man off the radio.
Yeah, no E on the end of Brown. I'm like, no! But it would always say additional content. And then in America, that would be called like staff writer. But it's very weird on UK and Irish credits.
Right.
And that was always like, oh, I was like, there you are. No one watches end credits, but you're like, there you are, additional content. It sounds like I showed up with sausage rolls, like, you know, what's additional content?
Yeah.
And then this series then, like episode 3, episode 5, episode 6, it's like written by Peter Foote and Ross Brown on the opening credits. And you're going, oh, like I got, that was the first time in a long time where I actually went, sit in this moment.
Yeah.
Because you love sitting in the fucking self-misery and the self-hatred.
I'm glad you did that, Ross. I'm glad you did that. Savour it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's brilliant. But, you know, that kind of leads me to kind of thinking as well, like, would that not in a way give you a little bit of kudos for something maybe in Channel 4, BBC 2, BBC 1 to say, listen, just to let you know, I love this programme, I love that which you're doing, and if there is any chance of a little bit of me getting my foot in the door or whatever, I'd love to do a little bit of writing with you.
Well, Peter said,
or whatever, you know.
There's an agent that's watching me and they're keeping an eye on me.
Brilliant.
You know, as in a writing agent.
He has
agent.
That on his CV now.
Yeah, unbelievable.
One of the main writers on The Young Offenders, one of the most successful television series in Ireland ever.
And like,
it's incredible.
I love it. I think it's great. I think the cast is great. I think PJ plays a great part, the two boys. Hillary, the lads I worked for down in Cork.
Billy Murphy.
They scaffolded her house.
Yeah.
Said she was 100%. I've never met her, but she seems like a really nice person.
Hillary
said. And you know what? I'd love a cameo in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what you're actually getting around to, Ross.
Yeah. That's why we got you here.
You're not leaving the room.
There's an episode called You Must Be Joking.
But the two boys come on the two boys podcast.
No, it is. It's come here. It's a great program. I'm sure not only me, but anybody who would be asked, you know, would you come down and, you know, 10 minutes. I know Jason done the Christmas special, didn't he?
Yeah.
Jason Bourne, yeah.
Yeah.
So, come here. It's great. And long, something like that's really good writing with really good acting. It doesn't really matter where it is, whether it's in Limerick or Belfast or Cork, wherever, you kind of go, that's fucking great.
What Peter did is very clever as well. He makes Cork a character in the show.
Yes.
And even the geography and the topography of everything, the look, the feel, everything. And it's immediately identifiable, but then it doesn't omit anyone. Like, nobody doesn't get it because it's from Cork. It's just like this extra layer on top.
Yeah.
And then even like when you're looking at the script, like the stuff, again, you're kind of going, okay, we're writing a really funny show. And then Peter's like, yeah, but what's the moral and what's the theme of this? And then you're going, ooh, every episode has like a real moral story, and it's like the two lads are, what's the lesson that they've learned, how do they develop and grow but still not change too much that they're not themselves, and you're kind of looking and going, oh, this isn't just about writing
jokes and funny situations.
This isn't a farce. This is actually a fully rounded show that could work as a drama. It's just that there happens to be really funny stuff on top of all that.
So that's where all the heart comes from.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because when people watch Young Offenders, it is gas, but there's a lot of heart in it. There's a lot of poignant moments Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, it does pull on your heartstrings. I mean, it's like a roller coaster of emotions. You're kind of up and you're down, aren't you?
Which is life, which is a perfect.
Yeah.
And that's when you know something's really hitting, because you're going, oh, that is the way the rhythm of life goes. Like, that is the swinging of the pendulum. So in one moment, it's heartbreaking. And the next minute, somebody walks in and says something, and you've completely shifted your emotional state because of it, you know? Like, that movie that I was pitching to Peter is in development at the moment. And it's like, that's 7 years ago. And it's in development at the moment. And it's, listen.
Just listen.
If I need two Southsiders.
Southsiders?
I know where I'm coming.
I tell you, I'll be the maddest bleeding Southsider you ever have in your life. more Bulmer Sider than bleeding Southsider.
Have you heard of Probablys?
Probably.
Have you heard of people going into pubs ordering Probablys?
What? No.
Oh, Carlsberg is now being called Probablys by Southsiders in Dublin. They're going, hi, could I get a couple of Probablys? Because it's probably the best lager in the world.
It's not even shorter than
I swear to God. My co-host said it to me. Rain said it to me on the radio the other day. She was like, they're calling them Probablys in the south side of Dublin now.
That's like Bleeding going in and going, can I have a couple of points of Chargy cider? Bleeding Bulmers.
Chargy?
Yeah, because that's what I used to end up with when I used to drink it. Those 2 points charge sheet though.
Could I get some sleeping bags? Sleeping bags, yeah, tenants.
Tents.
Oh my God. I heard Hino.
That's a very Ross O'Carroll Kelly thing now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But probably.
I used to have a little one liner about when you're doing a gig in front of the posh. What do you call an ugly Leinster fan? Deformed. Hey! Badumtush. Paul, you love that. Don't be fucking nodding your head in the studio about there. It's a cracker.
It's the way he tells them.
2 points are probably.
Yeah, probably.
No, that's like, amazing. That's why we can't have nice things. You know
no,
what I mean?
No, definitely not.
Ross, you play the Laughter Lounge a lot, and it's great. Do you enjoy coming up to Dublin and playing in the big smoke?
Love it.
Even though you're a Cork man and you're the proper capital and all that.
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it. I'm just like, that's the only place I'm happy is on. Like, as I said before, truly myself on stage, I'm kind of going, my kids and my girlfriend and audiences are the only people that were, it's the only times where I'm going, oh, I'm completely
that
me.
I understand you.
Yeah, I'm totally, I mean, yeah. I could be totally free.
Yeah, last time you were up here, I was on with you and you fucking, I'm not just, you know, you're ripper every time I'm walking with you. Yeah. You take the roof off the place.
Nice one.
And that's genuinely, so I mean, for me, just to tell people that are listening or people that are watching, if you do get the opportunity to go and see this man, whether it's a solo show or whether it's somewhere, go and see him. Like,
yeah. Ross Brown and the Laughter Lounge is a surefire great night out. That's what it is.
So what's the plans for this year, Ross?
What's your ambitions now,
My
Ross?
Ambitions? I got a tour, which I just kicked off called Only Joking. So it starts in Bray next week.
Right. Sorry, it's not you must no, be joking. Right.
that was a quick change in the show name.
That was like a scene from Batman or something like that.
So that's kicking off in Bray next week, then Listowel, and then...
Where are you in Bray?
Hardy Har.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, Adam's Hardy Har and Bray. Yeah, and then Mike the Pies in Listowel. And then kind of like going from like August to September, then I'm going to be doing the Civic and Talla. I'm going to be doing Cork Opera House. I'm going to be doing loads of places like, you know, Charleville and Cork, Newcastle West. I'm going to be hitting Roisin Dubh and Galway, loads of different places.
Brilliant.
So I'm going to be booking.
And where would I get the dates? Have you got a website, Ross?
RossBrown.com.
There we go, RossBrown.com. Brown with an E, is it?
Do you know my first time ever in the Laughter Lounge? Do you know how hard it was for me to get into the Laughter Lounge? Oh, so I was...
Boy, what size were you?
I was massive.
Had to take off a wall at the side.
You've got stairs, lads.
Before I went to Slimming World, I just couldn't get into it.
Tell us. So I was coming in. I was booked through the lounge, finally got an open spot. And then I ended up having to get a tooth pulled. Right, so I had a wisdom tooth coming up, but I had a smashed one from when I used to wrestle.
Man, he drives a hair bargain, doesn't he? You know, that was going to have to pull one of your teeth. What?
4 teeth in 7 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a smashed one from when I used to wrestle. So I said, can you pull that one to make room for the wisdom tooth, you know? So they pulled the tooth and they said, no, don't do anything strenuous. And that day I was moving from Dublin back to Cork and myself and my dad were lifting boxes down 4 flights of stairs up in Swords. And I ended up like hemorrhaging loads and all these clots. So I had to go back in and then your man stuck his thumb into the hole to try and plug it up. He was doing veneers and then he ended up going, he ended up leaving you one in the chair like, and he was in with me. So I couldn't go into the lounge to do the gig. So I sent Adam Burke in and said, just tell them you're Ross Brown. Right?
Poor old Adam.
So Adam comes
in. Can he even do a Cork accent?
Adam comes in, he's like, hello. Ross here. Right?
Joking.
So Adam does 7 minutes, right? And then I basically said, look, I had to send someone in because I didn't know how it ran. So I was like, I can't leave them a person down.
Yeah.
So I at least sent Adam in.
Should have said, we do this in Cork all the time.
So then the next time I finally got another open mic, and this took me like 6 months. I used to ring Peter every day, leave voice messages and everything. Ross Brown ringing for a gig again, blah, blah, blah. So I got.
So you were the original baby reindeer.
That's it. I want £1 million for this interview.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I finally get another open spot. So I drive up to Dublin again. You know, times are tight. You're, you know, budgeting your money, all that kind of stuff. You know, you're putting Coca-Cola inside in the petrol cap and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Driving up and I get in. I park the car up by Dame Street and then I go, I'll pop into Peter and the Bankers before I go in just to say hi. Oh, pop the head in. Peter's lighting candles before his show. I says, how are you getting on? Not too bad, Ross. How'd you get on the lounge? Huh? He goes, how'd you get on the lounge? I goes, no, I'm on the lounge tonight.
Last week?
He goes, no, but sure, Ross, they start early.
Huh?
I said, what? He goes, run. It was literally like a movie. He literally went, run. So I ran across the bridge, ran across
town. Slow motion.
Front doors were closed at the lounge, banging on the door. Doorman let me in, ran downstairs. Steve Cummins is on stage, can't see me in the darkness. And then he brings on an act. And then one of the sound guys came up and a manager and they were like, sorry, man, you missed your spot.
Oh.
I had to hop back into the car and drive all the way back to Cork.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. It was horrific.
Oh, man.
And then another like 7-8 months to try and get another spot. And then once I got that spot, Peter rang me like that Monday and he was like, I heard you died in your hole. And I was like, yeah. I goes, yeah.
That's Peter's favourite. Yeah.
I said, it was the club more than me, to be honest with you. And he goes, take out your book. And he definitely, you know, there on then.
And if you really die in your hole, he rings you up in the morning and goes, I heard you took the roof off. You won't be coming back.
A roofer.
No, but come here. Peter is he's one of the good guys. He's a good bloke. And we've known him.
A good few years, haven't we?
He's a great fella, but he's not a fella to be crossed.
No.
And I'm not going to elaborate on that at all. Okay? Leave everyone in suspense.
He's very tall.
Yeah.
Very tall.
We do a thing about what would make your mum embarrassed. I don't know whether you've heard it before, and people kind of write in on that, but I believe I've heard from a little birdie. Saying that you have a story that made your mum embarrassed.
So I'm...
I got to get the popcorn.
Yeah, sit back, lads. This is wild. I'm a goody two-shoes. Always have been. Never got in trouble. If lads were kind of crawling under a fence to go into a football pitch to play soccer, I walked home and said, can I go into this football pitch with the lads? Total goody two-shoes. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have kicked the shit out of me back in the day, like, right? Total goody two-shoes. So I was thinking, what would be something that my mom wouldn't like to hear or be embarrassed about? And then I was like, it's going to have to be something from, like, later on in life. So I made 200 euros one night from showing people my willy. This is before OnlyFans. This was like the first ever live peep show booth.
Can you give us your man's number?
So I was in Spain, right? I'm in Spain and myself and my buddy are getting ready to go out, right? And it's like frantic, you know, we're kind of, I'm in the shower, he's in the shower, he's brushing his teeth, I'm in the shower, you know?
Yeah.
And I was never on sports teams or anything. So like, you know, this whole like lads walking around naked was never a thing.
Yeah.
So my buddy starts helicoptering, right? So he's like, hey, right? So then I'm like, hey. And he went, what the fuck is that? And I went, huh? And he went, what's wrong with your willy? And I went, what do you mean what's wrong with my willy? And he went, dude, that's not right. And I'm like, what do you mean that's not? I goes, no, it's grand. And he goes, no.
So you get your foot off it.
He goes, that's not a draft excluder.
It's got a different colour.
So he goes, no. He goes, it's meant to look like this. And he showed me and I went, what is wrong with yours? And he went, what? And he goes, you've only got one hole. Right? So
what?
So we're 19, right? So I goes, you've only got one hole. And he went, you're only meant to have one hole. And I went, no, you're meant to have two holes. And he went, no, you're not. I goes, yeah, you are. He goes, you're not. I goes, I know, I've got one extra. And he goes, what do you mean one extra? I goes, I've got three. And he goes, you what? So
a three-hole Mickey.
So I never knew that you're only meant to have one hole in your willy.
Whoa.
So I've got three.
No way.
Right? So imagine this is it, right? Right?
Yeah.
And obviously this is a bit smaller. But imagine this is it, right? And here is where it would normally be. One of them, right? I've got, and this is the belly and this is the top. I've got 1, 2, 3. Right?
It's like a power shower.
It is. Yeah. The middle one's an orange juice dispenser.
The new Triton foreskin.
No, I'll tell you, it's gorgeous. Like, it is gorgeous, right? It's a lovely looking thing. So I found out then that I was circumcised. Like, only at the age 19 I found out I was circumcised because they were afraid because of where they were.
Well, you weren't circumcised when you were 19 because you wouldn't remember that.
No, when I was a kid.
Okay, right.
I can remember loads of student doctors standing around me when I was a kid and they had to circumcise me because they were afraid in case I'd end up weeing all over myself because of where they were.
The runners would be all yellow.
So he's there going, you're not meant to have that. And I'm like, I am. It's normal. He goes, it's not. I goes, yours is messed up. Yours is on the top of the head. He goes, no, it's not. So we went out to pub that night. We went and he went straight up to all the English lads and he was like, lads, how many holes do you have in your willies, right?
That's a real icebreaker, that, isn't it?
Yeah. And how his lads, not where he is from.
Never mind, so the
is that accent from London, is it? So his lads, have you two holes, many holes have you got in your club?
So they're all like, one. And he was like, dude, you have to see this. So he marches me into the toilet and he stands outside the toilet and he goes, fuck it, we're charging for this. So he sends the lads in, formed a line outside the toilet and went, one at a time, €2 per view. So the lads all line up, right? And they're all going, we're not paying or whatever. So he goes, first one's for free. So the first guy walks in and he walks out and he goes, what the fuck was that? And then everyone's like, so everyone's taking out their money. I swear to God, everyone in the bar, every single person, including the staff, all lined up and they knew what they were going in to see. Like, it wasn't like, you know, going to see a magic trick. They knew that they were going in, what they were going to see. And every single person was going, anyone that hasn't gone in, you have to go in and have a look at it.
You should be in a fucking freak show.
I tell you, I can earn a fortune.
But Ross, come here, tell me this. I'm trying to understand the situation. You're in the jacks. Yeah, are you Lionel? Are you in the cube?
No, I'm standing at the door and Heg is opening the door and I have it flipped upside down like that.
So, but when
the turtle's on his back.
flips upside down, going like a fountain.
Yeah. But as I'm just thinking, so one person comes in, the 2 euros been paid, if one person comes in, you go, how you doing?
Yeah.
And you put it back.
Money in the pocket.
And the next person comes in, how you doing?
Yeah,
that is.
Yeah, really? Basically.
Oh, wow.
And the thing is then, a couple of, like,
That's going to appear in the scene of the Younger Offenders now. When you see.
So obviously my close, like, friends group and other people would know it. So a buddy of mine one day knew about this and said it to a guy, right? Because apparently this guy was massively well endowed, right? This buddy he was telling me about. So then he tells your man, he goes, this fella has a massive one. Then he tells your man over the phone, like, he was like, you should see Ross's. And then he was like, why is it huge? And he goes, no, it's just like Godzilla. So his buddy is on the phone going, send us a photograph. And I'm like, I'm not sending a photograph. Like,
dick pic.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm not sending a fella a photograph. He goes, I'll draw him a picture. So so I drew him.
Artist impression.
I drew him a heavily detailed, like, I mean, it is like, you'd literally put the two of them beside each other and go, that's the one that mugged me. Like, they're bang on. Like,
so that's what happened there a while ago, wasn't there? A fella done for sending a dick pic over in England. So you know the way you're not allowed to send them anymore. It's classed as a crime.
I mean,
it's classed as a crime. Like, I know he was saying, like, how did your woman know? Like, was there a cock line up? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Six cocks there like that. Your woman's going walking down, going,
turn to the left.
Yeah. No, it's definitely that one. Do you know what I mean?
So I draw this picture, highly detailed picture. Your man takes the photograph of the picture and sends it on to your man. Your man's like, what? That's mental or whatever, right? So this is during COVID. So then we're after leaving work. This is during work. So we're after leaving the radio show, the radio station. And then we go, we're going to get a coffee. It was during COVID. So we're standing outside and there's someone at the door and they're like, just see your COVID passes. So I showed him my phone, COVID pass. And then your man takes out his phone and he goes to his COVID pass. But then he accidentally swipes right on the photographs. And he's like that. And she's like, I don't think that's a COVID pass. And he's got a hand-drawn picture.
Jesus Christ. Imagine the awkwardness. Going out with an injection, love, eh? Check this out.
I think you'll find everything's in order. She's like, not with those extra 2 holes.
The fella with the well-endowed cock sent back a picture of his drama spray can.
So I sit down when I wee all the time. It's like weeing through a curly whirly.
Yeah,
it's all over the shop.
Through a curly whirly, that's what it's like, exactly.
That's fucking brilliant, man. Ross, I never knew that about you.
Yeah, so I suppose.
I hope you didn't know about it.
First hand.
Hey!
But that's a brilliant story. That's probably the best confession we've had to that from that you didn't want your mother to know.
Your ma doesn't know, she knows now.
Yeah, I'm sure your ma was involved in the circumcision. Well,
I'm sure she knows, but not that I chatted. Not that
you showed everything, yeah. Ross Brown, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast.
Cheers.
We really love the bones of you. You're a tornado of fun. Go see him when he's on the Laughter Lounge. Go see him when he's touring. All the dates are where?
On rossbrown.com.
That's the one.
Rossbrown.com.
Ross Brown, you lovable langer. Thank you very much.
Thanks, lads.
Cheers, lads.